The Democratization of Information.
John Burns was the New York Times bureau chief in New Delhi in the late 1990s. I happened to visit him in the summer of 1998 when the World Cup soccer matches were being played, and Burns was trying to follow the games on Indian television. One morning, Burns told me the following story. "We have four satellite dishes on the roof of our house in New Delhi, which are costing the New York Times thousands of dollars a year. It's like we're running an uplink station here. Anyway, I got fed up because despite all these satellite dishes, I couldn't even get the Indian channel that televises the World Cup. It has something to do with weather interference and the satellites needing to be adjusted, and the man who is supposed to do it turns up intermittently. So I am complaining about all this over breakfast, and our cook, Abdul Tawheed, who is 71 years old and the former shoeshine boy of the last British commander in India, says to me, 'I don't know what you're upset about, sir. I get all the channels on my TV. You are wasting your time and money with your satellites. Come back to my quarters.' He and his wife live in a compound in the back of our house. So I go back there, and his wife is listening to the BBC. I said to him, 'What's she doing? She doesn't even speak English.' And he says to me, 'She's learning.' Then he hands me the television remote control switch, and with increasing astonishment, I start at channel 1 and go all the way to channel 27. He had television stations from China, Pakistan, Australia, Italy, France, all these channels to choose from, and it was only costing him 150 rupees a month, about $3.75. With all my satellite dishes, I only had 14 channels. He had just gotten some friend of his, who owned his own pirate cable system, to run a cable along the telephone wires and into his house behind my house. It was all unofficial and illegal, but he now lives in the wired world, and his wife is learning English. Meanwhile, I'm still struggling to get Indian television." Burns' story illustrates the third change that made globalization possible, the change in how we look at the world. I call this change the democratization of information. Thanks to satellite dishes, the internet, and television, we can now see through, hear through, and look through almost every conceivable wall. Sure, the president of a developing country, such as Malaysia, can come to his people today and say, "Folks, we're going to stop moving into this globalization system. We're going to erect new walls and impose capital controls again. We will have less pain, less volatility in our economy, but also slower growth, because we won't be able to tap savings from the rest of the world. So if you're not in the middle class yet, you may have to wait a bit." But when he does that, someone in a village outside the capital is eventually going to protest. "But Mr. President, I've been watching Baywatch for 5 years. You mean no Baywatch for me? No Disney World? No bikinis?" Governments that want to avoid globalization not only have to prove that their alternative can still produce rising standards of living, but, and this is critically important, they have to do it in an environment in which we all increasingly know how each other lives. We can all look into each other's windows now, and as a result, people are less willing to accept a lower standard of living than their neighbors enjoy. By shrinking the world to a size small, globalization brings home to everyone just how ahead or behind they are. This democratization of information is also transforming financial markets. Not only can investors now buy and sell stocks and bonds from all over the world, not only can they now do that by buying and selling from their home computers, but internet brokerage sites are now giving them, for free, the information and analytical tools to make those trades without ever having to speak with a broker. If you want to see where the democratization of finance, the democratization of technology, and the democratization of information all come together in one place, go to the internet today and call up the E-Trade website. In the fall of 1997, the New York Times ran a huge ad for E-Trade, one of the biggest online trading websites. The two-page ad carried a banner headline that read, "An investor's dream, a broker's nightmare. Introducing the new E-Trade, the web's one-stop financial center. With 10 times more research, more tools, more power, you can invest in stocks, options, and over 4,000 mutual funds. Set up and track your own portfolio. Place trades around the clock, online or by phone, for as low as $14.95. Free investing help and education, like mutual fund screening tools. Free real-time quotes, because old information is bad information. Also, get breaking news, charts, analysis from leading sources, and unsurpassed security using the leading internet encryption technology. Now open, free to the public, 24 hours a day. Check it out. Go now. Go fast. Because someday, we'll all invest this way. I guess it is appropriate that E-Trade's television ads conclude with this declaration, which in some ways is the declaration of the globalization era. E-Trade, now the power is in your hands.